Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Republic Education Call for the United States of America and our Republican form of self-government for February 13th, 2024 at 9 p.m. Eastern. I am Phyllis Marie, and I will get this call started with a devotion from Jesus Calling, and this comes out of John chapter 20, verse 19 and 21, and John 14, verse 27. Peace be with you. Ever since the resurrection, this has been my watchword to those who yearn for me. As you sit quietly, let my peace settle over you and enfold you in my loving presence. To provide this radiant peace for you, I died a criminal's death. Receive my peace abundantly and thankfully. It is a rare treasure, dazzling in delicate beauty, yet strong enough to withstand all onslaughts. Wear my peace with regal dignity. It will keep your heart and mind close to mine. We, the people of the Republic, are peaceful, lawful, and private. And our declaration states, when in the course of events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should be the causes which impel their separation. Hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are equal, that they are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, that their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among their just powers from the consent of the governed. And folks, I would ask you to please hold your questions until our guest opens it up for questions. And you would keep your background noise muted so that there's no interruptions. With that, I'll turn it over to you, Daryl, and you can take it from here.
If I could, for just a moment, I need to set the room to mute mode. And promote Daryl to panelist. Here we go.
Okay, are we, can you hear me?
We are all set.
Yep.
Go for it.
Okay, well, welcome everyone to tonight's call. Tonight we've got a special guest, Randy Kelton from down Texas, and he's ex-military, and he's got an oath that he said he took an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and you're never relieved from that duty. So he's on command and dealing with the internal enemies, the domestic enemies, and he's going to share a little bit of how he goes about his process of holding these people accountable and bringing them back in line to the law. He's got a radio program. It's called Rule of Law Radio .com, and I put that down on the link under the agenda. So if anybody ever wants to go in and look into that, it's there for you. There's a link on the bottom. It's a Word document. It's a governor criminal complaint that he brought against the governor of Texas for his overreach of authority. And it's 137 pages. And Randy's going to be talking about that a little bit in his approach. Would appreciate everybody if they would stay muted until it's opened up for questions, and then you can press star 6 to unmute. And then when you're done speaking, you can do star 6 again to mute again, so we have a good, clear recording. So with that, step forward, Randy, and you got the floor.
Okay, can you hear me now? Am I unmuted?
You are unmuted, yes. And we can hear you.
Okay. Let me explain who I am. I am a ex-combat veteran, Vietnam veteran. I came back from Vietnam and mustered out of the military. And they told me that I was not released from my oath. It was a lifetime oath. And that I would be bound to it for the rest of my life. And I said, okay, I can do that. Well, I swore on my oath that I'd protect this country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, I found an enemy. It was domestic. And the fight is on. I was a good combat veteran. And one of the things I learned in combat, you don't go in there and attack your enemy just because you can beat them. You don't get in a firefight just because you can win. Every firefight uses up resources. Everything you do must be incredibly strategic. And never get in a fight you can't win. You only get one of those. And there's no coming back from that. So, I got out of the military, and in 1981, I was arrested for and thrown in jail all night for driving with a headlight out. Well, I went to college for electrical engineering, and as an engineer, I'm very accustomed to tech manuals. I went to jail all night. I got out of sequence there, and when I got out the next day, I got out the Texas Penal Code and Texas Criminal Procedure Code, and I read them. And I'm an engineer. I read those as tech manuals. This is how it's done. And then I looked at the practice, and I thought, have I stepped through the looking glass? How can the practice be so dramatically different than the code? I spent 15 years trying to figure out what I had missed. I studied the codes. I studied case law. At the end of the day, it took 15 years of talking with judges and prosecutors and police officers, and it became clear on my first reading, I didn't miss anything. They really were doing everything wrong. Every step from arrest to trial, as practiced in every single state I've looked at, is not only wrong, it is very specifically against particular law. And it's not just against law. It's against law for a very specific purpose. Our legislatures, in their wisdom, decided that we have public prosecutors or learned counsel in public employ in the form of public prosecutors. This was instituted back in, I think, 1863. In 1863, they took away the right of the public to prosecute. Before that, if someone committed a crime against you, you didn't have a prosecutor to go to. You go hire a lawyer, and your lawyer would prosecute that person for you. Well, in 1863, they created public prosecutors and gave exclusive prosecutorial authority to prosecuting attorneys. So now it's the duty of the prosecutor to do the prosecution. Well, our legislature, in their wisdom, felt that the police and magistrates, the lower courts, needed a source of legal advice. And since we had prosecuting attorneys in the form of learned counsel and public employ, it'd be a great idea if we have prosecutors give legal advice to the police and the lower courts. That was a horrible idea. Anyone of a reasonable prudence would expect that to lead to precisely the disaster we experience today. Now, I haven't looked at every state. But I can tell you that Texas, at the moment, is the worst police state the world has ever seen. China, communist China, incarcerates approximately 121 persons per 100,000. Russia, 357. The United States as a whole, 657. Texas, 840 and climbing fast. Okay, I lied. Texas is not the worst police state. Oklahoma, and then Louisiana. Louisiana is the worst police state, 1,150-something per 100,000 they incarcerate. Oklahoma, just over 1,000. Texas, 840 and climbing fast. Texas counties in 2019 paid for the incarceration of people who were accused of crime and could not afford bail. They paid $11.9 billion last year, in 2019. That's the last year I have numbers for. The average conviction rate in Texas and every other state I've looked at is 99.6. We should be ashamed of ourselves. We promote ourselves as a free nation. This is insane. Most of us don't realize it's a horrible police state, just like in Nazi Germany. In Nazi Germany, 99% of the people went to work, they did their job, they came home, they fed their family. They did the things normal people do, and they never had any interaction with the legal system. They didn't realize what a horrible police state they were in. They're too busy taking care of their families and dealing with other issues. We're in the United States, the supposed freest nation on the planet. And we're the worst police state the world's ever seen. It's your fault. We want to find some bad guy that we can condemn beyond all redemption and then rail at in righteous indignation. Well, there's not one. All this stuff I complain about, there's no bad guy out there that I can rail at in righteous indignation. This is something that happened over a long period of time. And you and I, as citizens in this republic, forgot who we are. You know, the revolution that created this supposed free state was won by 3% of the population. 3%. Everybody else was busy taking care of their families, going to work and going to church and doing what they do. 3% won this nation. I'm looking for that 3%. As a combat veteran, it was my job to fix this problem. I couldn't sit back and wait. Those of you who know me know I have special motivation for this. But I spend my time looking for that 3%. And if I can find that 3%, though that 3% who's really willing to stand up to these guys and change the system, I'm telling you that you can do this. We all went through this COVID-19 issue, and we had the governors of all these states issuing all these executive orders. Part of the problem with that is, you know, I'm an old guy, and when I went to high school, we had civics class. They don't have civics class anymore. And when my governor issued 19 executive orders telling me what I could do and what I couldn't do, I said, wait a minute. Who in the heck do you think you are? the governor is the head of the executive branch of government. And he rules over the executive branch. Well, I'm not a part of the executive branch. I'm not a part of the judicial branch, and I'm not a part of the legislature. There are only two branches that can speak to me, the legislature and the judiciary. The governor, he's the effective president of my state corporation. You talk to all my public employees. You don't talk to me, Bubba. I'm your boss. So he issued all these executive orders that affected me. And I'm here in Texas, and everybody's griping and complaining about it. In a state of 29 million people, one guy stood up. One guy called himself a citizen in the Republic of Texas. Article 6 of the United States Constitution requires all of the states to provide for its citizens a republican form of government. Well, I bought that story. And I felt like one of my public officials was violating my law. So I wrote a criminal complaint against him. I think I sent in the wrong document because my criminal complaint was actually 250 pages. 39 felonies and misdemeanors I alleged against the governor. I filed that with the Travis County District Attorney. Travis County is the seat of government for Texas, in Austin. And the Travis County District Attorney just happened to be a Democrat. And the governor happened to be a Republican. And that worked really nice because it goes to some of the rules that I've put together. I've got some rules here. And one of the rules is you can never expect to win your case simply because you have the law and the facts on your side. To think so is naive. It is not that way now. Never has been that way so long as we have had human beings as judges. You can expect to win your case if you have the politics on your side, and all politics is local. So, I looked at the politics. Now, when I say this, people think, oh, that's horrible. No, it's not horrible. It's wonderful. It works great. It's only a problem if you're naive enough to think that the law applies. The law is just a guideline out there. What applies is politics, if you want to win your case. You have to play to the politics. Now, I know that sounds horrible, and a lot of you are going to object to that, but at the end of the day, I'm an engineer and a realist. I have ideas of how things should be, but I also have knowledge of how things actually are. There was a speaker named Jim Rohn, who used to talk about these things, and he said, there's this big humongous thing here. It rises up in the sky. It hangs there a while. Boom, crashes to the ground, this big humongous thing. Then it rises back up, hangs there, and crashes to the ground. And you might say, well, that's a bad idea. And you'd be right. But first, get out from under it, or you will get smashed. Figure out how things work. Then do it that way. Now, you can talk about how you think things ought to work, but first, figure out how it works and do it that way. And in saying this, you look at this and you think, well, that's horrible. That puts us at a terrible disadvantage. No, it doesn't. You and I, we are citizens in a republic. Everybody answers to us. And those people in positions of political power and influence will do everything they can to keep you and I from knowing who we are. I'm one guy. I file a criminal complaint against the governor with the the prosecuting attorney, because I know he's a Democrat and trying to make a name for himself, he gave it to the grand jury. And when he gave it to the grand jury, the governor immediately rescinded all of his executive orders, and 18 states immediately followed suit. That was not some big political pack, some large group of political activists. That was done by the most powerful person in the country, a citizen in a republic. And if I can do nothing else here, if I can demonstrate to each of you how you are a citizen in a republic, and when you walk into a courthouse or a public building, you are the most powerful motor scooter in the building, because everybody answers to you. And as a demonstration of that, I have stood in court 8 times so far. There'll be more. And said to the bailiff, "Mr. Bailiff, did you hear that?" And the judge, the bailiff said, "Yes, Mr. Skelton, I did." "Arrest that judge." How would it feel if you could stand in a courtroom and demand that the bailiff drag that judge off the bench and throw his behind in jail, and have the judge sit there and keep his mouth shut? Every time I've asked a bailiff to arrest the judge has sat there and kept his mouth shut. That's because he knew, and he knew that I knew, that I was the citizen in the republic, and he answered to me. If I can do nothing here today other than demonstrate to you all that you are citizens in a republic and the most powerful motor scooter in the building, if I can get 3%, we can change this country. That's all it takes. I have put the when I filed this criminal complaint against the governor, it was all part of a plan. I filed with the grand jury on the 8th. On the 9th, I put this complaint together, and I forwarded it to the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court in his capacity as a magistrate. You all should understand that every judge in your state is also a magistrate. And in as much as a magistrate is someone who sits for the purpose of hearing criminal complaints. Now, every judge is a magistrate, and mayors are magistrates, and sometimes some other folks are. When a judge sits for the purpose of examining into a criminal accusation, he takes off his judge's hat and he puts on his magistrate's hat. And in that capacity, he has limited authority. A criminal affidavit filed by a credible person gives a magistrate subject matter jurisdiction for the purpose of hearing a criminal complaint. And I'm saying hearing a criminal complaint because Texas so far is different than every other state. In most states, when a complaint is presented to a magistrate by a citizen, it's important to understand that complaints are never presented to magistrates by public officials. Policemen, for instance. The policeman may be a public official, but when he presents that complaint to a magistrate, he does not do so in his capacity as a magistrate. He does so in his capacity, I'm sorry, he does not do so in his capacity as a police officer. He does so in his capacity as a citizen in a republic. There is nothing in law that gives a policeman special authority to file criminal complaints. Complaints are intended to be filed by citizens with magistrates. If you go into a judge's office and you hand that judge a criminal complaint, that judge just got his duty as a magistrate invoked. And the only one who can invoke that duty is a citizen. He could be dressed as a prosecutor, dressed as a police officer, dressed as a politician. Doesn't matter what he's dressed as. He does it in his capacity as a citizen. That's a capacity you have equal to everyone else. What I did was I sent that criminal complaint to the Chief Justice of the Supreme, and Texas is unique in that Texas law says under 15.09, when a complaint is presented to a magistrate, complete in accordance with 1505, and that just says these are the requisites of a complaint, the magistrate shall forthwith issue a warrant. Well, he didn't issue a warrant. He threw it in the trash. So I sued him for $20 million. How's that work for you, Bubba? How's it feel to be played like a cheap fiddle? You can do that. I played the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme like a cheap fiddle. I knew exactly what he was going to do with that complaint. And as soon as he threw it in the trash, I sued him for $20 million. I filed a criminal complaint against him with the presiding judge of the Court of Criminal Appeals. Texas has two high courts. The civil is handled by the Supreme, criminal by the Court of Criminal Appeals. So I sent it to the presiding judge of the Court of Criminal Appeals, Sharon Keller. She should have known better. 2008, I put her and all the Court of Criminal Appeals in front of the grand jury. So she should have known better, but she threw it in the trash too. So I sued her for $20 million in her personal capacity in the federal court. Guys, we can do this. Now, I wrote out a 150-page presentment on due process. This is how due process is laid out in the code. And I spent 30 years trying to get this in front of these people so that somebody would do something. I filed criminal complaints all over the state with everybody. Absolutely nothing. So, I finally figured out that I was a citizen in a republic, and everybody answers to me, and I sued the highest judges in Texas, and there is nothing they can do about it. You're in Colorado. If you have problems where you believe that the police and the courts are not following law, how many times do you think you would have to sue them in the federal court to get their attention? I could spend 8 hours on this subject because it's what I do, but I have a whole set of routines on how to go after them. But the initial point I wanted to make here is we are far more powerful than we realize. And when you start to stand up as a citizen in a republic, you can expect every public official you encounter to do the wrong thing. They're all going to gather up behind this thin blue line and try to protect one another. And that's a good thing. The reason that's a good thing is you know exactly what to expect from them. So I have this rule. Never ask a public official to do anything that you actually want them to do. Because you never ask a public official to do anything that the law does not compel them to do. So, if I observe a public official acting outside the scope of his authority or directly violating the law relating to his office, I don't go down there and rail in righteous indignation, tell him how the cow ate the cabbage, and you're supposed to do this, and you're supposed to do that, blah, blah, blah. I use that as an opportunity to make up a criminal complaint and go give it to some magistrate. I never tell a policeman what he's supposed to do. I am about to go to Arizona and pick a fight. I want to sue Arizona in the federal court. So I'm going to go down to the jail. I've been down there before, and they're real tense down there. And they say no videotaping in the jail, in the jail itself. But they've got this huge curtain wall of this solid glass. So I'm going to go down outside the glass with a video camera, and I'm going to be videotaping them in there. And a policeman's going to come out and say, "Can I help you?" And I'm going to tell him, "Absolutely, you can help me. We got started early this morning. I missed my coffee. I take mine black. He takes cream and sugar." So what do you think the cop's going to do? He's not going to go get his coffee. So then he's going to tell me he's not going to get coffee. "Can I help you?" That gets a 911 call. I don't argue with him. I don't tell him I'm here exercising my First Amendment rights. He already knows that. If he doesn't know that, it's his problem. He's screwed. Screws the U.S. 363 U.S. 93, if a public official violates a ruling of this court and he be sane, he may not be heard to say he knows not what he does. That is the seminal case that reinvigorated the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871. It happened in 1945. So, if he steps across a legal line, I owe him no quarter. The last thing I'm going to do is tell him what my rights are and what his duties are. Because if you do that to a public official, they're going to claim that you are agitated and use that to justify anything they want to do to you. So when the second time he says, "Can I help you?" I call 911. I'm out here doing some videotaping outside the jail, and I've got someone with a gun. He has taken a threatening posture. I fear for my life. Get someone down here to arrest him for aggravated assault. What you have just done is pulled his teeth. And when he tries to say something else to you, you say, "You need to stand down. I have someone coming in response to my 911 call. You need to stand down. Whatever I have to say, I'll say to them." And all of the stuff I would have said to this officer about what my rights are and what his duties were and blah, 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 I say that to the 911 guy when I'm trying to get him to arrest the first guy. And I pull out this criminal complaint I already had made up because I knew what he was going to do. I set him up for it. And I put his name on it and show the officer, "Here, I'm signing this in front of you. Here, arrest him." Well, he's going to slither up behind that thin blue line, and he's not going to arrest him. So I ask for a supervisor. If he doesn't give me a supervisor, I call 911 again. And when the supervisor gets there, I tell the supervisor all the stuff I would have told this guy. But I'm not giving him fair warning. He is expected to know his job. If he doesn't know his job, his problem, not my problem. My problem is you just violated law at my expense and created a claim for me against you. Now I get to sue you in the federal court. And if anybody wants to do that, I can show you how to write a federal suit that is specifically designed to get a public official in a position so they have no immunity. We drag them into federal court in their personal capacity. Everybody's going to know I set them up. And it won't help them. Make it worse. You can do this, guys. You can take this system back. And I do a radio show on this subject, and we have call in. You can call in, ask questions. We have a number of people from Colorado. We have one from Colorado. Just won his second lawsuit. We are creatures of statute. I do not do politics at all. I don't do political theory. I do statute. I read their codes and take their codes and cram them right down their throats. If we are to get the system back, this is how we're going to do it. I'll be available for anybody on my radio show, LoveLawRadio.com. And here, I could speak out hours on this, but I'm going to stop right here. If anybody has any questions, let me have it.
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay.
My name's Rochelle. I'm in Idaho. Is there an unlawfulness to set someone up to commit a crime? In this case,
no.
That's what it appears you're doing.
Okay. It can be construed as entrapment, but just giving someone opportunity to violate a law, that's not entrapment. Police do that all the time.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, you would have to put someone in a position where they had no alternative, like either you shoot this guy or I'm going to shoot your sister. You either buy this dope or I'm going to beat you into unconsciousness. That's entrapment. But if you just give somebody opportunity, say, hey, I got this dope here. Would you like to buy it? That's not entrapment. Hey, you need to do this thing what the law says you're supposed to do, and I want you to do it. That's not entrapment.
Well, let me reverse a situation where the police officer would be entrapping the man or the woman, where you're stopped and you simply show them your that you're not a U.S. citizen, that you're an American national. You just show he stops you for whatever reason. And you basically remain silent, but just only show him this information. And he keeps asking for this, asking for that. At that point, he's entrapping you in his jurisdiction and into his...
Okay, you're not going to like my answer.
Go ahead.
No, he's not. If you are driving a motor vehicle in a state, and that state has license plates on it, those license plates are commercial license plates.
Oh.
And they would give a police officer reasonable probable cause to believe that you are operating in commerce. But it will give him cause only for the purpose of the initial stop. Once he's made the stop, in as much as a commercial vehicle can be operated in a manner that does not fall within commerce, then there's a question he must ask that they never ask. I got a speeding ticket recently, and I'm going to get the cop on the stand, and I'm going to have great fun with him. What's the first question you ask me? And he's going to say, well, I didn't ask you any questions. So you just wrote me a citation for speeding. He said, yes, I did. Well, what evidence do you have to believe that I fall within the statutory scheme? And he's going to scratch his head. I may have been operating in commerce, but if the citation does not state a fact to establish that I was in commerce, the complaint is insufficient on its face.
Very good.
Then you should challenge subject matter jurisdiction of the court. Always traffic, never, ever go to the merits. I know you want to. I wasn't speeding.
Wait, repeat that.
Never go to the
traffic,
merits.
Never go to the merits.
Never go to the merits, because the merits go to the discretion of the judge, and the judge will always rule against you. And first thing you want to do is go to subject matter jurisdiction. What evidence is before this court to show that I fell within the statutory scheme? And each state is different, but most all of the transportation codes are commercial codes.
Oh.
The legislators could have passed the transportation code into substantive law, but none of them did. I don't know why. But they all
that there's two parties. One's a U.S. citizen and one's a national.
No, that has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Zero. If you are an illegal alien and you step across the jurisdictional boundaries of any state, you have equal constitutional protection to every other citizen in that state, regardless of their status.
Okay.
In this case, in the case of any criminal prosecution, status is meaningless. Because when you step across the jurisdictional boundary, you enter into an adhesive contract with the state, wherein you agree to abide by the laws of the state. And
correct.
I've been doing this for 40 years and never found any way to waive that.
I'm following that so far, but you're almost losing me. But keep on going.
Okay, all of this status stuff, there's maybe some place where it is applicable, but certainly not criminal law. Absolutely not. You're in an adhesion contract. The fact that you chose to step within the jurisdictional boundaries of a jurisdiction binds you to their criminal laws, the criminal and for the most part.
By
laws.
Having those license plates and not making it clear that you're not under those restrictions.
No, none of that makes any difference. By being within the jurisdictional boundaries of the jurisdiction, that is enough. That's all they did. There is absolutely no way to indemnify yourself for that unless you are a certified dignitary of a foreign nation.
Oh, like a diplomat?
Yes, and it has to be a real nation. You know about Robert Fox?
Oh, I was thinking passport diplomat.
Robert Fox is an old-time legal researcher. The jackass got me sentenced to a year in jail trying to help him out, the old buzzard. But he was driving with plates from the Kingdom of Israel.
Oh, boy.
And he was arrested and taken before the federal court. And the federal judge said, "What the hell are you doing?" They said, "Well, he's impersonating a foreign dignity." And the judge said, "You can't impersonate a foreign dignity from a non-existent country." And they threw him out.
Yeah.
The only time the laws don't apply to you is if you are a foreign dignitary. That is it. Zero else.
So the laws would apply to me unless I make sure that that cop knows that I'm not under the commercial contract that he thinks I'm under.
That's the one that counts, exactly. But don't tell the cop. Never argue with the policeman on the street.
So I'm confused about the word standing then. I thought standing meant who you are and what jurisdiction you stand in. I'm confused.
Okay,
standing
means you have a dog in the hunt.
Yeah.
I have someone came to me that out of Victoria County, and they really screwed him over royal. And he doesn't know enough to be able to take him on. I do. But I can't take him on for him because I don't have standing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a guy in Arizona who wants to sue Arizona, but he doesn't have enough knowledge to take him on. So in order for me to be able to help him, I'm going to go to Arizona and pick a fight.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have a fight with the governmental entity, you want it to be a fight you picked. So I'm going to go down there and encourage them to violate my rights. And the last thing I'm going to do is tell them they're violating my rights. Never give fair warning. When you're setting these chumps up so you can sting them, don't warn them. This cop, the last one, I was speeding to get to a court on a speeding ticket, and his dirty rotten copper pulled me over and gave me a speeding ticket.
So how did you respond to his initial questioners?
He said, "Can I see your license?" "Absolutely. Proof of insurance." "No, you can't see proof of insurance. You can look that up." And he said, "Okay." And he wrote me this ticket. I didn't say anything to him. No fair warning. When I get to court, I'm going to sue him personally for acting without subject matter jurisdiction. That's how he's going to find out I'm annoyed with him. He's not going to get fair warning. He's not going to get opportunity to shield himself from prosecution. Screw that. If you want legal advice, Bubba, go get the prosecutor to give you legal advice. I'm not going to do it. Everything.
So you can't handle this on your on paperwork. You actually have to step into the courtroom in that kind of a situation.
Yeah, you can handle it on paperwork. Before I go into the courtroom, they will have a subject matter jurisdiction challenge.
Oh, okay.
And when I get to the court, they're going to call my name, and I'm going to tell them I am here at arm's length to the court.
Mm.
I have a challenge to subject matter jurisdiction before the court. Subject matter jurisdiction is a threshold issue.
Oh,
while
stop.
The judge
What's that mean?
May... The, while the judge may appear to be in the court, legally he is not.
I see.
Jurisdiction is presumed. When a complaint is filed, jurisdiction is presumed. Once jurisdiction is challenged, the court must prove jurisdiction. Now, they can get the prosecutor to do it for them, but the prosecutor is doing it for the judge. It is the responsibility of the judge to prove subject matter jurisdiction.
Correct.
The only time you can sue a judge, I'm sorry, there are two times you can sue a judge. When the judge acts without subject matter jurisdiction, and when the judge fails to perform an administrative duty.
Ooh.
And one of the things I do is show people how to set up judges to fail to perform administrative duty. I filed a 250-page criminal complaint against the governor with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the state of Texas, invoked his duty as a magistrate, and he failed to issue warrants. Gotcha, Bubba.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Dead bang. The law said you must do this. He did not do this. In that case, he has no jurisdiction. He has no immunity.
And did you show merit? Excuse me, first.
Pardon me?
Did you show cause first why he should arrest the governor?
Yeah. I filed a criminal complaint. I filed a criminal complaint stating that on this day, I filed my certified mail with Nathan Hitch, Chief Justice of Texas Supreme, the attached 250-page criminal complaint against the governor. Nathan Hitch failed to issue a warrant in accordance with 15.09 Texas Code of Criminal Procedure, and by so doing denied me in the full and free access to or enjoyment of a right in violation of 39.03 Texas Penal Code, which is a Class A misdemeanor in the state of Texas. That's how I did it.
So you were acting as a judge?
No.
No?
I was acting as someone much more powerful than a judge. I was acting as a citizen in a republic.
But you were judging the judge that he didn't do his duty. And
that's right. Everybody answers to me because I am a citizen in a republic. That judge swore on his oath, and he swore on that oath to me personally. That's the difference.
So you couldn't have done that directly to the governor, though. You couldn't have gone up to the governor's office and told him he was in the wrong. You would have had to go through the judge and make him do your dirty work.
Well, make him do my dirty work?
Yeah, all that nasty stuff, putting the governor in jail.
Well, I'm kind of object to that. There's nothing dirty about following the law.
Okay.
That wasn't dirty.
Yeah,
work.
So
now,
you were forcing the judge to do his job.
Yeah, I couldn't arrest the governor myself because I did not personally see or hear him commit the offense. Had I personally seen or heard him commit the offense, I could have arrested the governor myself.
Oh.
So if a policeman commits an offense in front of me, I could place him under arrest and call 911, and I do that all the time. Yeah, just come on, Bubba. Just give me one reason I could call 911. That's all I want, just one. And I will call him in a heartbeat. Never argue with the policeman on the street. If he gives you a hard time, call 911. I got a guy out here with a gun. I feel threatened. He is violating law. Get someone out here to arrest him. Never argue with the policeman on the street. Now, the 911 guy that shows up, you can argue with him all you want to, but not the policeman. They are not accustomed to sovereign citizens. And I hate to use the term sovereign because it's been so denigrated. But to citizens in a republic, acting like citizens in a republic.
Well, I think this is a situational little lesson here. To me, that's how I learn things, and I know I'm taking the time. Maybe somebody else can bring up a situational awareness and walk through it so we know what to do specifically.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, thank you.
One thing I can tell you guys is once you figure out how this works, it is so much fun.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a fight with the locals, you always want to have the fight you picked. Go in there and pick the fight so you're the plaintiff. All of us, for the most part, are accustomed to being accosted by the system, and they're coming after us. And that is difficult. I can tell you from experience, when you go after them, it is so much fun, you won't believe it. I went after the Chief Justice of the Supreme, and then I went to my city. I was sitting in traffic, and a sheriff's deputy in front of me and backed up traffic, and he pulled out on the shoulder and took off down the shoulder and slung rocks all over my car. We move up one red light, and I'm sitting in front of City Hall, and there's that cop sitting there. Well, that annoyed me, so I pulled in there, and I asked for his name and badge number, and he wouldn't give it to me. So I went inside and got a couple of cops and asked them to arrest him, and they laughed at me. This is a small town. They didn't know who I was, or they wouldn't have done that. So I filed criminal charges against them. Four criminal charges, two against each one of them. Official oppression, next day. Official oppression and shielding from prosecution with their chief of police. And then I called the mayor and I said, Rodney, I've been living in this town for about 40 years and I have sued all the highest judges in Texas and all of the heads of all of the agencies in Texas who train public officials. I sued them for $485 million, but that was just for practice. I was just practicing here to get ready so that when I sue this county, I know what kind of responses to expect to get from them and I know how to handle them in the federal court. So, I just filed criminal charges to your chief of police, but I don't want to sue the city I live in. This is my home. So you make sure your chief of police does exactly what the law commands him to do. A week later, I get a motion in the federal court by the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme advising the court that they should dismiss my case because it was frivolous. As I filed it for practice, and he had the mayor's email attached to it, I thought, Bubba, you should not play poker. He was absolutely furious. Oh, I laughed till I hurt. The motion itself was frivolous on its face. But this is the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme. Second largest state in the union. And he is absolutely furious at one single solitary citizen. What if I get 50 people to do that to him? You think he will keep ruling again in violation of law, or you think he'll get his crap straightened out? It doesn't take.
You better watch your back. That's what you better do.
No. That's what happened. I've been doing this for 4 years. I had a bailiff arrest me in the district attorney's office, having a private conversation with the district attorney, and he said that I said, damn and thumb bitch. And he was probably right, I did. But he had just blocked me from getting to the district judge with criminal complaints against the governor and the county judge. He arrested me and took me from the district attorney's office to jail where they held me all night. A friend of mine was ex-chief of police for the city of Decatur, where this courthouse is. And I talked to him, and he talked to this guy, and he said, you arrested Randy Kelton? What were you thinking? I'm suing him for $500 million. Him, the district judge, the county judge, the bailiffs, everybody. So go ahead with me, Bubba. See how that works out for you. I the next time I went down there, this officer had been retired. I am telling you, you can be the most powerful person in the building. And you won't do it some obscure law. Read the code. Get out the criminal code and the criminal procedure code and read them twice. The first time you read them, everything's all scrambled around in them. So nothing really follows. So the first time you read them, you just read through them. It won't make sense. Don't try to understand it. Just read through
them. How many are there?
It's not that many. You get the code out. You only need to read about the first half, because the second half gets into all kind of obscure crap that you don't care about. The standard things they charge everybody with. Just read through them. Then go back to the front and read through them again. They're outlined, so there's a lot of white space. It's not nearly as big
minute.
As it is.
Wait just a second. I have a library. I have access to the court's law library. I go in there and ask to see the criminal codes. I sit down there and open that book, the criminal codes, and that's it. And I start reading them.
Yeah, the first half, the first four or five chapters, read those real close.
Right.
They go to all the really basic stuff. What is mens rea? What is culpability? And once you've been through that, you go through it, and then go back and read it again a second time. And when you read it the second time, you'll start stitching it together. I read my code, and the second time I read it, it said under 211, when a magistrate sits for the purpose of examining into a criminal accusation, that is an examining court. I said, oh, that's what Chapter 16 was about. And you'll start making connections back and forth once you've read it twice.
Are there about 100 codes or 50 or what for each city?
Yeah, about 150, 200 pages. But you only need to read the first half, and they're outlined, so there's lots of white space in it. But it doesn't matter. You read those two twice.
I'm going to still do that.
You will be an unbelievable force to be reckoned with. You'll make these guys absolutely insane. What got me started on this latest approach is I'm setting up officials so I can sue them for profit. Go ahead, do something stupid so I can sue you for it and get your lawyer to write me a deal. A kid in Colorado Springs is photographing the police department from across the street. Two cops come over, give him a hard time, arrest him, hold him for 14 hours, release him. He sues them for $70,000 in 3 months. They settled for $40,000. Would you spend a night in jail for $40,000? I would. I spent lots of nights in jail. Three dislocated ribs, two broken collarbones, broken elbow, tooth knocked out, more arrests than I can count. I got credentials. Now I'm going to go down there and get them to violate my rights so I can call 911 and then sue them. If you sue them, then we pull out all my dirty tricks. I haven't even got to dirty tricks yet. Do you know what happens if you file a bar grievance against a lawyer?
Yes. Oh, a judge. Yeah, I do know.
Yeah, you file a bar grievance. Yeah, in Colorado, you file it with the Supreme Court. the State Bar of Colorado will tell you to file it with them, but that's bull crap. In Colorado, you file a bar grievance with the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will get that bar grievance, and they'll throw it in the trash, and they'll send you a letter that said, we examined into your accusation, find it does not rise to the level of misconduct. And that's a good thing. The reason that's a good thing is their insurance carrier knows they'll throw it in the trash. So how do they gauge their level of risk? By valid bar grievances? Heck, they throw them all in the trash. By the numbers, there are 9 underwriters of legal malpractice in the country. They are all underwritten by Lloyd's of London. They all have the same criteria. 1 bar grievance, your first year of practice. They cancel immediately. 2 bar grievances, any 1 year of practice. If you've been practicing 20 years, they cancel. 3, they'll cancel your law firm's malpractice insurance. Valid, invalid, they don't care. That is so unfair to these poor lawyers. Yeah, Bubba.
So what actually do you file, a criminal complaint against the lawyer?
No, a professional conduct complaint. I filed against a lawyer claiming that he parted his hair on the left. I just was annoyed at the guy, and I was just screwing with him. I filed a bar grievance accusing him of parting his hair on the left, the no good rotten shyster. And I got this
plain foolishness.
I got a letter from the State Bar Association that said, we examined into your accusation and find it does not rise to the level of misconduct. I got over 100 of those. No matter what I filed, I got that same response. And this lawyer has a insurance agent, and it is the insurance agent's job to charge his client as much as possible and avoid any claims. So he's sitting there just waiting for a bar grievance so he can charge his client more money.
Oh,
now, that is absolutely unfair. Yeah, Bubba, life is
tough. What you could have done is looked up the bar association agreement they have, and there is a code of conduct. I'm sure you could have actually gotten a legitimate thing to complain against him.
Yes, yeah, I could, and I generally do that. I know the American Bar Association standards frontwards and backwards. You should read them.
Where can I read those in the law library?
Yeah, you can get it online. Look up the American Bar Association standards. Every state has adopted those and then made adjustments to them. It'll read like a comic book. You won't believe all the stuff you can bar grieve them for. Yes, I know it frontwards and backwards. But I filed against this guy for that to demonstrate to the bar how ludicrous what they're doing is.
Yeah.
Since you guys don't do your job, I'm going to bar grieve this lawyer for nothing, and I'm going to cost him his malpractice insurance, and you don't even get to complain about it. That's the crap you've created. That was the purpose of that filing.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt the conversation, but there's some other people on this call that might like to ask questions.
Oh, please, I yield.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Randy, thank you for your presentation. This is Kent. Thank you for your presentation. I want to ask you, for those of us, others of us who have been in the military, you started the conversation off by saying you got involved in this based on the oath of foreign and domestic enemies. Do you ever use that oath in your paperwork or in oral arguments in the court? Or is that just the history of how you got started? And then I have a couple of other things I want to ask.
Okay. That's the history of how I got started. I use it sometimes because I like to file criminal complaints against public officials, especially policemen, for the tiniest little error. I don't like going after public officials when they do horrible stuff that'll ruin their life and ruin their career. I don't want to do that. I want to pick the tiniest, most minuscule little crap I can find, then go after them for that. something that's not going to ruin their lives or their careers. I had a bailiff drag me out of the courthouse once, shove me out the door, knock me down, broke my elbow. He didn't mean to break my elbow. And I had kind of pushed him over the edge. You know, these people are human beings like everybody else, and it's not my purpose to attack human beings. I was there to file criminal charges against the district attorney of the grand jury. And they were meeting with the grand jury, and the district attorney came out, and I said, is the grand jury still here? And he smiled at me and said, no, Mr. Calton, you missed them. They just left. And I said, okay, Bubba, I'll get them next time. And the bailiff said, Mr. Calton, just what is your business here today? And I told him, I have business here today, and it's none of yours. He said, well, I'm the court bailiff and the court security officer, and I want to know what your business here is today. I said, if you're the court bailiff, you troop your little behind in there in the courthouse and be a good little bailiff, you're dismissed. Well, he kind of lost it. Drugged me down the stairs and shoved me out the door. And as I stepped out the door, my foot hit a carpet there. It was in the winter. Just as he touched my back, and it caused that carpet to scoot out from under me, and I fell down and broke my elbow. Now, am I going to ruin this officer's career because I pushed him over the edge? He was a human being. And he absolutely did not mean to knock me down. So I don't want to harm public officials. That's not my purpose. I want to get them to do stupid little stuff that they don't see coming and sting them good so they'll change their behavior. We could eliminate all of our public officials and replace them, and we'd be in the same place. But if I come back to the court and this bailiff is there, I'm going to get no crap. He, as far as I know, he's never put his hand on anybody after that. This is my job, not to punish my public officials, but to bring them back in line. And I try never to do anything out of anger or avarice. That will nullify your effectiveness. Am I making sense?
Yes, it does. Now, I want to also ask you, you've said several times, and I'll stand corrected if you disagree with this, but you said several times about setting them up. The examples that you gave and listening to what you've said, I don't really conclude that you're setting them up. It seems to me by their bad conduct or illegal, unlawful conduct that they're setting themselves up. Would you comment on that, please?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But see, I'm looking at these public officials as human beings. I have a son-in-law who got elected as a justice of the peace. And he's really genuinely a good guy, and he wants to do the right thing. And I walked him through the codes and showed him what was wrong with what they were doing. He looked at the codes, and he agreed. Then he went to his training, and they trained him to do it another way. So against his father-in-law, who showed him the code and contrasted with the state of Texas, who do you think he followed?
The state of Texas?
Yeah. And he's a good guy, and he wants to do it right. But I had a friend who was the justice of the peace. He had been a sheriff's deputy for 20 years. And then he was justice of the peace. And it was my opinion that Mark Autry would do what he thought was right if it hair-lipped the Pope. Well, he was a Baptist preacher, so that's not saying a whole lot. But he really wanted to do things right. And I sat down in front of him and I walked him through the codes. And when I was done, he looked up at me and said, Mr. Kelton, are you telling me that what I did for 20 years as a sheriff's deputy and now 12 years as a justice of the peace and what every other police officer and judge in Texas has been doing for the last 30 years is wrong, and you're right? I said, don't ask me, Mark. I didn't write the code. Here it is, plain as day. And he just could not wrap his head around the fact that everybody could be wrong. And they are. They're all wrong. And we're the only ones who can fix it. So I don't go after these guys with anger or avarice. Especially policemen. They're put in an impossible position. They're the ones on the bottom. Now, I sting them, but I try not to sting them hard. I try to sting them enough so that they go back to their boss and say, hey, wait a minute. You're sending me out here to do this crap, and that guy just sued the snot out of me. So if you want that done, you go do that. He's going to ruin my career. And the way I ruin his career is file professional conduct complaints. Everybody listening, when you're dealing with public officials, professional conduct complaints. They kick these officials behind big time. You file criminal complaints against them, they all slither up behind this thin blue line and protect each other. But when you file professional conduct complaints against them, it hammers them big time because all of them have insurance agents behind them, whether it's direct insurance or bonding. And those agents are just looking for an excuse to raise an officer's bond rating. You file 6 professional conduct complaints against a police officer, and when his contract comes up for renewal next time, the bonding agent's going to say, if you rehire this guy, we're going to raise the bond rating for your entire department. What do you think's going to happen to Joe Jackboot? Bye, Bubba. There's more than one way to skin this cat, and I apologize to anybody who likes cats.
Randy, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Wait, I'm not finished.
Oh, wait, yes, sir. Go ahead and finish your line of questions.
Randy, could you expound on, you were saying that status doesn't matter and that you are automatically, by stepping into that jurisdiction or that state, you're automatically in their system. That really doesn't go along with what we've been learning here on this call regarding status, standing, capacity, character, etc. So could you expound on that a little bit? Because it appears that you would not be one who would necessarily file an affidavit with the U.S. State Department regarding your status as an American national.
Yeah. Absolutely not. I've been doing this for 40 years. I've known all of the big guys in the Patriot movement. Sam Kennedy was the first. He used my documents in his presentations. Tim Turner, Winston Shrout. I did radio shows with Winston Shrout. I've known all these guys. And I've been 30 years trying to get these guys to give me something. I am a creature of statute. I did a show with Winston Shrout, and he explained his bankruptcy theory. And I said, Winston, I'm a creature of statute. And Winston was on Pastor Massett's Truth Radio Network. And I think the pastor set me up for this. I said, Winston, I'm a creature of statute. And when I go into the court, all I have is statute and case law. So what is the law underlying these procedures that you're presenting? He said, well, I don't think you'll find any. I said, well, then where did you come up with all this? He said, and I'll tell you, I held Winston Shrout in high regard. He said, well, I figured it out. So I said, well, I guess in essence, you made it up. Long pause, and he said, yeah, I guess I did. I said, Winston, I can't go into court with I made it up. I need statute and case law. But he didn't have any. Gene Keating didn't have any. Tim Turner didn't have any. Sam Kennedy, none of these guys had any. I've been 30 years trying to get chapter and verse in support of what they're promoting so that I can go into court and adjudicate it. I would love to be able to do this, but I can't find it. Nobody's given it to me. They tell me a lot of stuff, but when I start looking up the case law, Gene Keating was the worst. He had his front page of his website had six cases supporting his position. I looked them up. None of them had anything to do with what he was talking about. I can't tell you how frustrated I am with this. I've been called all over the country to get people out of jail following these procedures, and it is frustrating. So I did not, before I came on the show, I talked about this. I did not want to go there. I don't want to challenge your beliefs, and I don't need to. I'm offering a set of tools we can use that really have nothing to do with status and all of that. It has to do with taking these courts and these policemen's law, the same law they enforce against us, and cramming it down their throats. You go to any courthouse in the state of Texas and mention my name, and you can hear every bailiff's anal sphincter muscle squeeze shut. I was in a small little town in DFW area, and the bailiff, I was talking to someone else, and the bailiff came over and said, sir, are you Randall Kelton? I said, well, yes, I am. He said, I'm a lawyer in my day job, and I do this so that I can keep my certification and carry a pistol. And I was driving through Austin as a member of the National Guard, and I would listen to 90.1, and I'd hear you on the radio, and I would think, boy, I hope I don't ever come across this guy. And here you are. I am very well known in Texas. And most everybody knows I get a lot of respect. I get respect from policemen. I get respect from bailiffs. And they know one step out of line by one of them, and I'm going to land on them like a ton of bricks. But I've had a number of them. I think the thing that stands out the most was Judge Hayes in Mansfield. I went into his court. I was helping people stop foreclosures. And another fellow went in front of me, David Lewis, and he went up to the court, and I went up and stood at the bar. And Judge Hayes was a real jackass. He looked up and said, can I help you? And I said, yes, Your Honor, my name's Randy Kelton. Yeah, I know who you are. I'd already pissed him off. I said, I have a hearing defect. Do you have accommodation for the hearing impaired? No, I do not. I said, well, you have a sound system here. Will you turn it up? No, I will not. I said, well, then will you speak up? And he did. He told the bailiff, if I didn't sound, shut up, he'd throw me out of the courtroom. I won't go through my hearing. My hearing pissed him off even more. And when I left the courtroom, I stood up and slammed my folder shut, pointed at the bailiff and said, you, come with me. And I stormed out of the courtroom. I get outside the courtroom, and this big bailiff, about 6'6", just a bear of a man, he said, what can I do for you, Mr. Kelton? I need you to arrest a judge. Well, why did I arrest the judge? Class A misdemeanor, official oppression, criminal violation 39.03 penal code, in that he failed to perform a duty he was required to perform, and in the process denied me the full and free access to or enjoyment of a right. That's why I say read that code. The bailiff stood there having no idea what to do. He said, I can't arrest the judge. I said, sure you can. Just go in there and drag him off the bench and drag him off to jail. You ain't got far to go. There's one right in the basement. Oh, Mr. Kelton, I can't arrest the judge. And this is something I always say to him. I said, Mr. Bailiff, you need to take your chicken suit off. The reason I say that is they're going to want to say that I was agitated. That's their key word. Mr. Kelton was agitated. So I get to say, Did I get agitated before I asked you to take your chicken suit off or after? I kind of lost why I went there, but this is how we take these guys on. You can do it. I can do it. Everybody can do it.
Okay,
will you go back
you
to
that.
Your question? I kind of lost my place.
Well,
I'm old. I do this.
I was simply asking, since much of this program is dedicated to status, standing, capacity, and character, and American nationals, and, you know, you seem to be saying, and you just verified, that, you know, you're not taking that position. You're using their laws to correct them.
Okay, the reason I came here, I was asked to come here to offer some remedy. Most of the people who are concerned about their status are concerned about legal remedy. And I'm not here to argue status. I'm not qualified to argue status. This is a area of research that I've not been able to find law to support any opinion one way or another. What I have found in 40 years of taking these guys on, that in terms of dealing with these public officials, status has not been an issue. Now, you may have circumstances where status is an issue, and that's great. And frankly, I would really like to know how status is a tool that I can use. I got a box full of tools. If I could add status to those tools, I would love to.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm not anti-status. I'm just offering some other tools that do not necessarily go to status one way or another.
Again, I appreciate your presentation. And lastly, would you repeat the website? I missed that website that you gave, and then I yield. Thank you.
Okay, it is Randy, I'm sorry, Rule, R-U-L-E, of lawradio.com. And we don't do politics. On our show, I avoid politics like the plague. All we do is legal remedy. And we only do legal remedy based on the code, the way it is written. And I can tell you from experience, most every state has a highly sophisticated code. Every remedy you need is in there. You got all these prosecutors dragging out all these tools they use against you. If you read the Code of Criminal Procedure, or the Criminal Procedure Code, depending on the state, and the Penal Code twice, you will absolutely be a force to be reckoned with. And if you get, this is something over which I don't have any interest in, Dr. Graves' Juris Dictionary. People go to law school and they spend all this money and all this time teaching them how to argue legal issues. What they don't teach them is how to file motions, how to get motions set on for hearing, all this technical stuff on how the court works. Dr. Graves in Juris Dictionary, he shows you how all this works. I do this radio show on legal reform, and I have people calling in with legal issues. When I get someone who has been through Juris Dictionary, we have ourselves a whole different conversation. I get to step up a giant level in sophistication in dealing with these guys. This is the stuff they don't teach in law school. Every lawyer who gets out of law school should take this course. You take this course, and you will absolutely be a force to be reckoned with. That it's not some huge law school bullcrap. I'm trying to create 2-3% of the public who know how to fight these guys. Regardless of your status, you need to know how to fight these guys, especially if you're concerned about your status, because they're not going to like you bringing in status that tends to nullify them. So you need to know how to fight them. And this is not for my profit. You know, I do a radio show, and my producer doubles my paycheck every month. Doesn't get any bigger, but makes me feel better. I do this because it is the right thing for the right reason. Like I said, I'm a combat veteran, and these rights that we talk about, I paid for those. And I paid heavy. And I'm here to ensure them. So I'm recommending Jurisdictionary, but I get no, I think it costs about $250. I get nothing from that. That's not why I'm recommending it. That will make you a force to be reckoned with. All these questions people are asking me about, how do I file this and where do I file that, Dr. Graves will answer for you. We can create an army. We can take this system back. We are at a unique time. I'm in Texas, and the governor is at odds with Biden. Texas is the only state in the union that has reserved its right to secede. Secession is on the ballot for the first time ever in Texas history at the next election. If Texas votes to secede, it will destabilize everything. And it's an opportunity for us to correct the system.
There's another question, I think.
Yes, Randy, if I may ask what the you go back a ways.
You know, give your first name.
This is Stephen.
Yes.
Stephen, you had said that the first thing ever you want to do is to make a jurisdictional challenge. I'd like to ask about the other jurisdictional challenge. You mentioned subject matter.
Yes, subject matters first. Second is in personam jurisdiction.
I'm talking about the other one.
You have another one?
Yeah. United States territorial jurisdiction, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, for geographical challenging the U.S. territorial jurisdiction of the site where you're accused of, or the geographical land location wherein the accuser must prove that that is United States territory, that land.
Okay. Yeah, well, that only applies if you're charged with a federal crime, and only in certain circumstances in a federal crime. If you're in one of the territories, Guam, Puerto Rico, those are territories. The states are not territories.
That's not my understanding. Is that all? That the definition of county, let's say you're in a county in Texas, the definition of county, city, and state is property of the United States. That's federal.
Is it not federal? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The property within a state that is the property of the federal government are federal prisons, federal U.S. International ports, and post offices.
Exactly. Or it could be a national park. That land could have been ceded in the property records from the state ownership.
It could be a national park.
To the United States government.
Within the state that the federal government has subject matter jurisdiction over are those properties that have been ceded to the federal government. Now, the first one are federal prisons, and the feds did that so they could hire their own guards in their federal prisons and U.S. Post offices and U.S. and international ports, because we have the port is dealing with foreign countries and dealing based on treaties of foreign countries, and the federal government has jurisdiction over foreign treaties. But a piece of property has to have been ceded to the federal government by the state. Federal courts, they are not federal property. They are state property.
I'm talking about for any of their statutes, codes, or ordinances to have any force and effect, my understanding is that they have to have United States territorial jurisdiction over that spot where you were arrested.
Wait a minute. That's presuming that you were arrested by the feds.
No. It's for an order for the state ordinances, statutes, or any codes like a motor vehicle code to be applicable, they have to have United States territorial jurisdiction. The cops.
No, they do.
Because they're acting as United States officers.
No, that is not true. The state, each state, we're in the United States, so we hear state and we think of state as a subdivision of the United States. No, that's not the case.
They vote for the president.
State means sovereign nation.
Then why
each
are they voting
state
for the president of the United States?
Because all of these sovereign nation states have entered into an agreement with a federal union. But the states are sovereign in their own rights under Rooker-Feldman.
Can
I
tell
you about the difference between like the state of Texas and Texas Republic or state Texas state? Is there, do you see any difference between the state of Texas and Texas Republic or Texas itself, the land mass of Texas, that's not the federal territory of the United States?
The state of Texas is not a federal territory of the United States.
Oh, they don't
no
use zip codes?
No,
they don't
state
use any two-letter state designation?
Zip, that's bullcrap. All the zip code does is allow the federal government to designate a zone that each post office covers. It has nothing to do beyond that. Each state is a sovereign nation. That's kind of been covered up, and we haven't been taught that in civics class. But every state in the United States is a sovereign nation in its own right.
Yeah, the state,
and that sovereign
the actual
nation
state, but
has engaged in a contract with the federal government so that the federal government will handle certain circumstances that affect all of these 50 sovereign nations equally.
Right.
Randy, would you agree that there is two forms of, let's say, the state of Texas? Is there two forms of Texas, or is there only one form of Texas?
Only one I know of. There is a Texas corporation, and I hear a lot of stuff about the corporation, but that's grossly misunderstood.
I thought all the state courts are all incorporated. In all the towns, are there
yeah,
corporations?
Are. Yeah, they are. And this all started in 1863 with this action by the feds in D.C. They established D.C. And there was a little problem there because D.C. straddled two state lines, Maryland mm-hmm. and Virginia. And they had... and this came from the Patriot Movement. They sent me to this 1863 treaty. And what it said was, is we have this 10-square-mile area, and we've got some 20-some-odd different municipalities within this area, and they were located within two different states. So we had all sorts of different governances for each of these municipalities. So what we're going to do is we're going to incorporate all of these municipalities into one jurisdiction. And the Patriot Movement has taken that to say that the United States is a corporation. I said, no. Wrong definition of the word. They're using the word as a proper noun when the treaty used the word as a verb. We're incorporating the governance of all of these different municipalities into one central governance, one central city called D.C. so that everybody in D.C. had the same rules to follow.
Randy, could I interject something here?
Yeah.
When you open up the statutes, codes for a state, it will define the United States, the state, and municipality. And each one of those definitions, it'll say it includes the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, its territories, and cellular possessions. So that's where those statutes apply in their jurisdictional definition when it's used within that code. So wouldn't that...
Wait a minute. Step back. There's something missing here. You're saying that every municipality in any state in the United States is a part of the United States itself?
It'd be a subdivision, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be an inferior corporate.
I have never found anything, and Rooker Feldman would tend to negate that. The states are sovereign nations. The federal government.
Your state is. Not the corporate state.
I had two feds come to my house once. And they called the chief of police first before to find out about me. And he told them, you better not go there. You better let me take you. A fed cannot come into a county without the permission of the sheriff of the county. All over the United States. Because the feds have no power within the state without the permission of the state. When Kennedy was shot in Dallas, the feds converged on Dallas, and the sheriff of Dallas County, threw him out. They said, well, the president's been shot. He said, yes, he has, and that's my jurisdiction. Get the hell out of here. They threw them all out.
That was before 1968, before they made all the federal territories. The zip codes, the 10 state federal zones.
The zip codes mean squat.
I was taught in school that all the state abbreviations for, like, Kentucky was K-E-N-T, Colorado was C-O-L, period. Then later in the year, this is when Nixon was in. This is when he made the 10 federal zones. And he made all the zip codes, and he made the two.
Okay.
They came back later in that year, and they said, oh, the teacher said, all those state abbreviations we taught you a month or two ago, they're all incorrect. The correct abbreviations are all these two-letter state abbreviations. They're for federal zones.
So what? That's just for the postal service.
Territorial jurisdiction.
No.
Daryl, man.
If you go...
Where do you get territorial jurisdiction? Because the mail service designated areas for the mail service to deliver mail in. How does that go to territorial jurisdiction?
Do you know who Paul John Hansen is?
No.
He's a lawyer. Not an attorney. He's a lawyer. Okay? Constitutional lawyer. He said one time... He's a guy like you. He goes in and he plays with these people, okay? And then the judge asked him, what is your address? He was winning. He was going to win everything, okay? He had everything just strategically done correctly. And he gave them the two-letter state abbreviation and then the zip code. And the judge hit his gavel and he ruled against him. After he gave him that zip code.
Show me some law statute that passed by the federal legislature that converts states into federal zones. That goes...
Mr. Calhoun?
That's diametrically opposed to the whole structure of the United States.
That's exactly right.
Texas is not a federal zone. Texas is a sovereign nation.
Oh, so you're saying the state of Texas is the same as the Republic of Texas. That's what you're saying, correct?
Yes, exactly.
So all the state Supreme Court, the Attorney General in the capital of Texas, he's not on the United States side. He's from the Republic of Texas side.
Yes,
is that what
he
you're
is.
Saying?
Exactly.
We're going to need to see if there's anybody else got any questions. We're going to need to close down here pretty quick. So.
Yeah, Daryl.
Yes.
Okay.
I think I can. Let me close.
With kind of an explanation.
Just wait, Paul. What did you say, Paul?
I think I can clarify. Now, everybody knows about the Act of the Error 1863. Everybody knows about the Act of 1871. Those are red herrings. Those were thrown out there to grab.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Act of 1871. You're talking about the Ku Klux Klan Act?
No, I'm talking about the Act of 1871 that actually created a corporation for D.C. But it was repealed. It was undone shortly after it was done. But where it all boils down is 1933 is when the country was bankrupt and the country was taken over. The Trading with the Enemy Act was rewritten, making citizens of the United States enemies of the state and making the states state of subcorporations of the U.S. Trading Corporation, which is the United States Incorporated, which used to be the Pennsylvania Mining Corporation when the seat of our federal government was in Pennsylvania. The whole thing is laid out piece by piece, step by step, with exhibits in a work by Eugene Schroeder called the War and Emergency Powers Act. He goes through all of the things that happened in 1933. He goes back to the beginning of time. He has exhibits and he shows in actual statutes and legislation how they did what they did. And that's very, very easy to find. You can find that video by going to exposethematrix.com. You can find that video.
What does that
mean? Do you agree with that, Mr. Kelton?
No. Well, agree with it. I don't know what it means.
Okay.
What does it mean concerning the Constitution and the laws passed by our legislature? When a judge or steps up behind a bench, he doesn't do so in his corporate capacity. He does so in his constitutional capacity. And what do I care about his corporate capacity? Why does it matter?
The fact is, pursuant to 1933, we were all declared enemies of the state.
I've heard all
enemy.
That stuff from Winston Shrout. But that doesn't change the Constitution.
Different. There's two separate entities. There's the United States and the United States of America. There's two in the United States Code. Do you know what the definition of the United States is in the United States Code, Mr. Kelton?
Paul.
Give it to
10-mile square area of Washington, D.C. That's the United States. And these people... Maybe this other gentleman can explain it more eloquently than I can, but they are under that jurisdiction, under the United, these are all United States, the counties, the cities, and the states, they're United States property. U.S. territorial jurisdiction for their laws that they're using.
Says. Where'd you come up with that? You're just saying that. Give me some.
It's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. That's where it's at. They must
have
that geographical proof. They have to go to the land. Yes,
Stephen,
sir.
Hold off.
Go ahead.
Paul, you weren't finished.
In order for In order for statutes, acts, and codes to apply to you, they have to have federal jurisdiction, because as a 14th Amendment citizen of the United States, you are a federal citizen, and you are foreign to the actual Texas state. You're foreign to
Wait, hold on. You're just making crap. You're just making these statements. Give me some support that says that if I can't have dual citizenship.
You can have dual citizenship.
Then what the heck does the federal jurisdiction mean?
But they have to have...
I'm in this... Man, you know,
when there's a territorial challenge, they have to prove that they have that U.S. territorial jurisdiction.
I'm in the state of Texas.
It's a challenge.
Federal jurisdiction.
No.
If I'm in a state court in Texas, the feds don't have anything to say about it unless they have violated a specific provision of the federal constitution. How does all this other federal stuff matter?
A state of is not a physical state. Texas state is a physical state. You can have all kinds of states. You can have a state of delusion. You can have a state of confusion. You can have a state of euphoria. The hook is in the words.
You're playing games with definitions. When I use the term state, I mean sovereign nation. I don't mean physical state of being. And you're juxtaposing those and playing word games with them.
They play word games. That's how they mess with us.
That's
exactly
the difference.
How they do.
I don't believe
in law
is the Republic of Texas. I don't believe they're both one and the same.
Okay.
I didn't come here to argue these issues. I have some tools you can use regardless of your status.
Yes, and I'm really excited
state
about
of being. These are just... I have some specific tools you can use. And I've been 30 years trying to sort all this stuff out, and I've got nothing satisfactory. And for me, it's exceptionally frustrating because I've been called all over the country to get people out of jail from following these procedures because they're so imprecise. Everybody has different definitions. And I'm an engineer. I don't do well with these unstated presuppositions, and I get stacks and stacks of them. But I don't really care about all that. You know, that all may be exactly the way you say, but I'm a creature of statute. I take the statutes the way the jurisdiction claims to use their statutes and use their statutes back against them.
I would love to have you talk to somebody that I know. His name is Joe Lustica, and he bought a car from another state, and he paid cash for it. He actually paid for it with lawful money. He never registered the car, so he never put a license plate on it. So he never had the hook with the DMV. He didn't have a driver's license because he had either surrendered it or allowed it to expire. And a cop pulled him over, seized jurisdiction over his car, towed it, wrote him a stack of tickets, and forced him to go into court. He challenged jurisdiction because the car was not the state's property. It was not registered with the DMV. He challenged the jurisdiction because he did not have a driver's license or a business relationship with the Department of Motor Vehicles. They stole his property that he had a $100,000 lien on. And they still found him guilty because they claimed they had jurisdiction because he was in commerce because he buys gas. And they still have his car almost a year later. And he is right now in the appeal process.
Okay, I'm not saying that the courts are not corrupt. And we're dealing with guys who will do anything they can to keep things the way they are.
Right.
And,
exactly.
You know, I do this show. I get this all the time. And what I'm presenting here are tools that will keep you from getting to those places. I'm going back to the heart. This, you want to come after me, Mr. Public Official? I'm going to land on you like a ton of bricks. I'm going to take the same crap you're throwing at me, and I'm going to cram it down your throats. Just talk to Nathan Hatch, Chief Justice of the Supreme, see what he says about that son of a bitch skeleton. If we start taking this up to the top, regardless of our status, regardless of anything else, we get this guy to violate a law which we know he's going to violate and go for him directly, threaten his personal assets. We will influence them to conduct themselves in a way to keep that from happening again. That's all. That's all I'm saying. All of this other about the patriot community, it's not an issue I want to take on. And I was concerned. I talked to that about this before I came here, because I knew this would become a point of contention.
I think it's beautiful that we can come together and that we can talk about all of this stuff, because I'm telling you, with the teeth that you have and with the actual return to the republic, to return to a republic form of government, to return to allegiance to the republic state, you put those two pieces together and we've got these guys. We've got the entire country.
If I may, may I interrupt?
Nikki, go ahead, and then we're going to have to close down here pretty quick here.
Okay, what the speaker is saying, I do agree with the state of Texas, because I had got my undergraduate degree there, and I had to take Texas Constitution. But I was raised up here in the Northeast. So anyhow, I'd like to just bring another tool to your attention, and that is by reading the preamble to the U.S. Constitution, the 1787 Constitution, with the words that were used. That's called contemporaneous exposition. States had one definition back then. Was nobility, still in the Webster's Dictionary. And I put them in the chat area here from Johnson's 1755 dictionary. Posterity, of course, is the younger, the children, those who are coming after them. And the definition of esquires, they are the younger sons of noblemen forever in the 1755 dictionary. Okay? So we, the people of the United Nobility, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, assure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to who? Ourselves and our esquires do obtain and establish this Constitution for the United Nobility of America. And go ahead and search the 1787 Constitution for the words of America. You'll see they only come up three times. Everything by secession and acceptance, contract law, goes into the 10-mile square. This goes right along with what you've been saying, and it's all about contract law. So, it's been fraud since the get-go, constructive fraud. Okay? Thank you.
Randy, is it Randy at ruleoflawradio.com?
No, it's just Rule of Law.
Ruleoflawradio.com is the
website,
radio show channel or website. And Randy at ruleoflawradio.com is my email.
Thank you. Have a nice
day.
May I ask one last question? Did you ever get that website? You used to be on there with two other guys. I forgot their names. That wasn't one of them. Wasn't Al Adask, was it? Alfred Adask, was it?
No, it was not Al Adask. That old bastard. I hadn't talked to him in years.
Oh, what a man.
Okay, there was one other question.
He used to write the anti-shyster magazine. That was a lot of work.
When Al went to jail, I captured anti-shyster, and I still hold the websites for them or the domain names, and he never wanted them back.
Do you have the? Is there any back issues of that? Is there anywhere to get all the back issues of that?
No, I never got his website stuff. Last I heard of Al, he was somewhere outside of Austin.
Boston or Washington? I thought you moved to Washington State.
But we're going to need to close down here. There was one other question, and then we're going to have to close down for the evening. Maybe we can.
God bless you, Randy. It's nice hearing from you.
May I just two quick short questions?
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Who is this?
Randy. Gigi.
Okay.
Randy. I'd like to know how many times you've been successful at exercising your right to have a judge arrested, and two, what do you have that every judge is a magistrate judge so that I might obtain information on that?
Wait a minute. I'm having trouble understanding you. Are you on a hands-free device?
Yes. How many times have you had a judge arrested? And number
Never.
Two, oh, I thought you said that you had a bailiff arrest the judge.
I've asked him to eight times in court, in open court. I filed charges against him probably 50 or maybe 100 times. I can't keep track, but never have I got one arrested.
Oh, okay. And then two, you mentioned that all judges are magistrate judges. Could you expand on where I might obtain information on that?
Well, in your criminal procedure code, there will be a definition of magistrate.
Correct.
A magistrate is a person who sits for the purpose of examining into the sufficiency of a criminal accusation. Judges can do it. Mayors can do it. You know, in Texas, Article 2.09, who are magistrates? Justices of the Supreme Court, judges of the Court of Criminal Appeals, appellate judges, district judges, county judges, mayors, or justices of the peace, municipal judges, mayors, and county recorders.
Okay, thank
you. They
all
have their job. But when somebody brings them a criminal complaint, they take off whatever hat they got on, and they put on a magistrate's hat for the limited purpose of examining into the sufficiency of a criminal accusation. That's consistent across all the states.
Yeah.
Well, Randy,
right.
Randy, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing these other options that we have to basically hold these people in line with their authority. And if there's anybody that's new on the call that does not receive the notices for the Tuesday or Thursday night calls and would like to receive them, you can send Phyllis an email. She'll want your first name, state, and who invited you to the call, and a phone number. And she will send it. We do not share any of your contact information, but if somebody wanted to reach out to you, they will send Phyllis an email, and she will forward that on to you. And then it'll be up to you to reach out to them at your convenience. So, Phyllis, if you'd want to give out your email. Are you muted, Phyllis? Okay, well.
Yes, I was muted. Yeah, I was muted.
Okay.
My email is blueridge1121@gmail.com. blueridge1121@gmail.com. Anybody's
okay.
Got Protocol or any of those encrypted email places, you probably have to put my email in there for them to accept my notices. I yield.
Okay, well, thank you, Phyllis, and thank you, everyone, for coming on the call, and especially Randy for sharing the information that you did. It's very helpful to, you know, see other angles of avenues in which to effect a remedy and how to deal with the overreach of authority. So we appreciate that, and with that, Thursday night we have a health call, and so you're all invited to come on to that. It's the same number, same time. So if there's anybody that would like to close in a word of prayer, if not, then I will. Heavenly Father, we come before you to thank you, Lord, for the information that was shared this evening. We just pray that you'll prepare our hearts and minds to be able to comprehend it in a manner that we can apply it effectively, and that we can help to correct and restore this country back to being recognized as one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. And we just thank you, Lord, for the information that has been revealed, that we can further understand how to correct some of the abuses that have been forced upon the population. We just pray, Lord, that you'll continue to guide and direct our steps, and just ask you, Lord, for your wisdom to be effective in helping us to return this country back to being a bottom-up system, and where you are the source of absolute right and absolute wrong. And we just continue to thank you, Lord, for all that you've given us, and ask that you continue to prepare the way before us and deliver us from the force of darkness. In the name of Yeshua, we commit all things into your hands. Amen. Well, thank you all for coming on, and we just hope we can apply this, and we've got resources that, you know, are available, and the website and all that is on notice for tonight, so you can get on those rule of law his talk show. When, I don't know, what time do you do that, Randy? Still there?
I think he left us.
Okay. Well, with that then, we'll say goodnight all, and we'll see you Thursday.
Thank you.